good evening, everyone out there, whether it's cold or whether it's warm. This is Kilo 6 Sierra United November, and this is South Cars, the South Coast Amateur Radio Service. This net is conducted under the guidelines of the South Cars organization and further follows the rules outlined in FCC Part 97 and Good Amateur Practice. This SCARS server is supplied by the Great Lakes Reflector System provided by Kilo Bravo 8 Zulu Golf Lima. And all contacts and requests for information will be handled through the net control. When contact with another station is made, please move off this system and establish your contact direct so the net may continue. In fairness to all, short-time stations will not be recognized as such. All stations will be worked in the order in which they've checked in. Information regarding our HF operation may be found at www.southcars.com and for this digital operation at www.voip.southcars.com. Your net control actually for this session is Gary, KC2RMO. His location is Syracuse, New York, where I'm sure it's very, very cold. But my name is Kathy. My call sign is Kilo 6 Sierra United November. My location is Port St. Lucie, Florida, where currently we have a temperature of 48, low tonight of about 32, but we did have a high of about 55. So prior to starting, I'd like to ask if there's any emergency traffic or anything out of the ordinary that needs to be handled. If so, I ask you to come aboard. All right, before I ask for birthday stations, and maybe he's still connected, maybe not, I want to welcome NS2B, Bob, to South Cars this evening, and he says he may not be here. He says he's going to go to the twin qualifier there, races at Daytona, but I did want to welcome him. So, do we have anyone celebrating their birthday either this week, last week, or this upcoming week that would like to come aboard so we could say happy, happy birthday? All right, hearing no birthday stations, and I always have that same saying, that means we're not getting any older. You know, this is the Thursday Informational Net Open Forum, or TIN for short. This net is conducted to provide information pursuant to amateur-related subjects and all other areas of general interest to those participating. All are encouraged to participate and ask questions of our guest speaker or speakers. I do want to advise everyone that our sessions are recorded for future presentation on our website as a podcast. So if you've talked this evening, you will definitely be part of that recording. So with that, Mr. Gary, KC2RMO, I'm going to throw it your direction so you can begin this evening. Thank you for doing this session once again, and I hope you have fun. KC2RMO from Kilo 6 Sierra United November. Please come aboard.
Well, a big thank you to everybody's favorite transistor sister. That's, of course, Kathy. This is KC2RMO, and we're back once again with Ask an Elmer. Now, if you're not familiar with this, think of it as tool time for ham radio. Coming to you from Syracuse, New York, in the beautiful outer Comstock section there. We've got 4 degrees right now. With a 26-mile-an-hour wind that's knocking that wind chill down to about minus 19. They're talking about temperatures, wind chill temperatures tonight, getting down in the minus 30 range. We're going to talk about your tech questions tonight, ham radio in general. We're going to swap tips just about anything to do with amateur radio and computers, too. Ask questions. We'll throw them out to everybody listening, and we'll see if we can get you an answer along the way. Let me just buy a nickel here. We love to hear from new hams. So if you're a new ham, listen up. And more importantly, let's hear from you. If you've been doing this for a while, let's hear from you too. Remember how this works. When somebody has a question, we throw it out to the listening audience and we see if we can get an answer. So let's get things underway right now. We'll take some check-ins. I'm KC2RMO. This is the Thursday Informational Net on South Cars, looking for check-ins.
NS2B.
I don't think everybody. It's like cold feet out there. It's like NS2B. Who else do we have? Okay, NS2B. Bob, welcome aboard. And what say you, sir?
New to this. I'm new to this conference. Just found it the other day. A friend of mine was telling me about it, so I thought I'd log in and check it out for a while. But unfortunately for tonight, the twin qualifiers from Daytona are on TV, and I'm really a race nut, so I'll be in and out watching that for the most part, unfortunately. Anyway, I'm over in Penfield, not far down the road from you there, Gary, and it's 5 degrees here, so we're just warmed all up here. Anyway, back to that NS2B.
Well, you're probably going to see it a little bit cold. We're right in the city of Syracuse, so Penfield's probably going to get right down there, you know. So good luck. Hang in there. Enjoy the races, too, Bob, and thanks for checking in. If you're, again, I just want to kind of go over this one more time. If you're new to Ask an Elmer, it's a pretty simple concept. You know, if you had some questions about amateur radio, and really, it doesn't have to be anything super complex, especially if you're a new person. You know, that's the whole thrust of this really is to get new people asking questions, learn a little bit more about the hobby from some of the more experienced people, and that really is what it's all about. So if you're a new person, don't be afraid to check in and ask a question, because there's no such thing as a stupid question. You know, I can give you plenty of stupid answers, but but I guarantee you that there's no such thing as a stupid question. We'd love to hear from you. You know, a couple of things I just want to go over right now while we have the opportunity is for those of you who may be in some of the colder areas, this has been something that has been plaguing me in the past couple of days. We've actually been in this weather pattern for a while. So really, the past 10 days, we've experienced below zero temperatures in one form or another. We are expecting below zero temperatures in one form or another for the rest of the month. Actually, that's really what the forecast came out that way today. So that's where we're at. And one of the things that that plagues amateurs in this time of year is ice on your antenna, and I was getting a good dose of that the other day. I have a rather small antenna. It's an MFJ 1788 loop, very compact, does a very nice job, but it's kind of an ice catcher. Let me buy a nickel. So it takes a little while to, you know, you get a little heat on that, and it will clear up, and you get decent SWRs out of the thing. But it also has that compound problem that it has a motorized capacitor in there that tunes it, and that gets icy too. So it gets to be kind of an interesting little, you know, first half an hour on the air where you're working this thing and knocking it down. But, you know, when you have a wire antenna, if you've got a fairly substantial wire antenna, you know, that's going to weight that down. You get enough ice buildup on it, it can cause the thing to break. So I'm going to ask the question right now to anybody listening. Have you had or are you having trouble with ice on your antennas? We'll take some check-ins right now. On the TIN, this is South Cars, and I'm KC2RMO.
V3MEW.
Okay, we have Bill, and Bill, I know you probably have had some experience with that. Anybody else want to talk a little bit about icing on antennas?
Sierra United November.
Well, we've got two this time around, so let's go to Canada. Hello there, Bill. It's good to hear from you. And what can you talk to us about tonight regarding ice on antennas?
Good evening, Gary, and everybody on the net. Yeah, I can mention that. We have that problem from time to time. Had it earlier this year. The precipitation hasn't been quite right lately for ice on the antenna. We have, at the moment, we have minus 34 degrees with the wind chill here. Of course, talking about SUN when she came in there, I'm like trying to think what problem she could possibly have with ice on an antenna. Of course, then again, I found out it was 28 degrees in Tampa this morning. I guess there's a possibility for ice at 28 degrees. Yeah, I would say so. I think they said Miami was 33 or something like that. Oh, my goodness. Anyway, getting back up here, It's going to be minus 38 by the way tomorrow morning when I go out with the dog at 6 o'clock to walk the dog. Yeah, I've went out there and I have an off-center fed Wyndham wire antenna, and it's 260 some feet long, stretching from one corner of the lot to the other and back towards the house, and folded back upon itself a little bit. I haven't stretched it absolutely totally tight. That's not what you're supposed to do. There's a bit of sag in it, which is normal for that length of wire. And at times it's got covered up with ice. And I've seen me out there with a hockey stick borrowed from a neighbor. And I'm throwing his hockey stick up in the air, trying to hit this wire antenna to knock the ice off it. And, of course, sometimes you miss. Well, most of the times I guess I miss. But eventually, you get enough throws in there, eventually you hit the thing and all the ice comes tumbling down. So that doesn't help much for the beam. I got a 3-element monobander beam for 10 meters up at 45 or 50 feet. And I'm not climbing that tower in the winter. No way. Not when it's covered with ice. And what would I do when I got up there anyway? It's another 6 feet from the top of the tower to the beam. What do you expect me to do? No, I let Mother Nature take care of it. Not much I can do about it, as far as I'm concerned. I don't have a solution for that, so I just leave it. That's basically the experience up here. I have some pictures, by the way. Pictures of the antenna covered with ice and big blobs of snow going down the top of it. Quite beautiful, really. But, oh, there goes the tinkle bell. I'm going to be timed out here momentarily. So that's a little bit of experience at this end with ice on the antennas, Gary. KC2RMO, VE3MEW.
Hey, thank you, Bill. You cracked me up with the hockey stick. I thought that was great. Good tool to use, though. Yeah, you know, that's the thing. And again, for folks that maybe have not put up a lot of antennas or you know, just haven't been in the game that long, Bill made a very important reference, and if you're using a wire antenna, I think your instinct is to stretch that thing tight, and that's about the last thing you want to do, because antennas pick up ice if you're, you know, in the northern part of the country. They pick up ice, and, you know, that weights it down. And, you get enough ice, you're going to break that wire. And also, if you have that hanging from a tree, if you're using a tree as a support, if you get a flexy enough tree, that's gonna move that antenna back and forth. So if it's a tight one, it's gonna snap. So you want to give that antenna some give. You want to put some slack into that antenna. It's nice to think, okay, I'm going to get this baby nice and tight and make it look great, but you really do want to have some sag in there. I was thinking, too, Bill, let me just buy a nickel. I'm being very careful with my timeouts tonight because I haven't been on the air for a while, and I'm losing track of time very easily. I was thinking, too, that for us folks north of the Mason-Dixon line, that we should take a cue from the folks in Florida, and we should have smudge pots for our antennas. Might be a good idea. And speaking of Florida, let's go down there to K6SUN, and hello there, Kathy.
Well, hello there, Gary, and I only came aboard because I just wanted to talk about antennas, and I didn't want you to be talking to yourself, but I'm glad, Bill, you were there tonight. Remember the years up there in Michigan, and my son is still in a bad part right now. I think up there him and my mother are way low temperatures, but they don't have an antenna. But, you know, we don't have ice on an antenna down here, but who knows, maybe we could have it now. But we haven't had the time, Gary, to get one up. We've just been so busy with different things that we haven't had a chance to get that antenna up. But right now it is cool down here, 48 degrees. It wasn't 28. We haven't reached that yet, but it's going to be about 32. And the wind is pretty strong. You know, Gordon's outside right now enjoying some of that wind, I'm sure. And I enjoyed that today. outside of my classroom. It was very, very cold. We don't have the ice and we don't have the snow. But I did want to come aboard and just tell you, if I had an antenna here in Florida, who knows? I may have had ice on it. But I do want you to pick up Doug, K-A-0-G-Y-F. He was talking about the Android and a problem he had today. So maybe you have some input. I'm not sure if you have smartphones or Androids. But maybe you can call on Doug, and if you weren't listening, he can share that problem he had with his Android. So back to you, Gary, and thank you, and thank you, everyone, for being here tonight.
Hey, thank you, Kathy, and I do think I'm going to go with the smudge plan idea. I like the idea of that, you know, and maybe Bill. Bill could use it more than I could. Me, I just run it on low power for about half an hour, and it warms it up enough apparently to get the ice off it, and then I can bring it up. But Bill has a bigger fish to fry than I do. But yeah, you know, with Doug, and I hope you're listening, Doug, because I'd like to call on you next. One of the things that I was going to talk about tonight, I have a site that I'll put up in the text box. Let me just get the link here. I'll get it ready. Yeah, it's right here, as a matter of fact. We'll just do this. Make a little copy here. And go over here and do a little paste over here. And hit that. And there you go. Okay, this is a whole bunch of really good apps, mostly for Android phones. There are some iOS devices in there. And they're mostly all free too. So some good shopping. I mean, some stuff that you're probably already familiar with. Echo Link is on there, for instance, and I've got Echo Link on my Droid phone, and I've got a couple of other apps. Some of those which are on this site too, on my phone too. But it's a good spot to go shopping. And certainly the price is right on most of those. But I would like right now to get Doug here from KA0GYF. If you are there, sir, check in and let's hear a little bit more about this Android situation, sir.
Thanks, Gary and South Cars. All well here in Fort Myers, Florida tonight. Fort Myers is on the Gulf Coast, a 2-hour drive south of Tampa. And let me tell you what, the temperature in frigid Fort Myers, 48 degrees, going to a low tonight, predicted of 33. So I have the electric heater running on 700 watts low, and it feels real good because, of course, I'm wearing shorts because I always wear shorts because I live in Florida. Thanks for the website. I got it, Best Amateur Radio and Shortwave Apps. Let's click. Some of them might even be in Google Play. That's what I use. I don't use the Samsung Play Store. Just never got around to that. One more thing to put on the smartphone. Mine runs pretty clean, pretty smooth. I noticed the batteries are running down lately, more so than usual. And it has a user serviceable battery, as most Samsung Androids do. So the battery wasn't that old. That doesn't mean it's good, but wasn't that old. I change them pretty routinely, about every 6 months. But I know, there was this, my Avast antivirus for Android has a feature for tracking, and it's called anti-theft. And you can, I found that it, I'm nearly positive that is what's forcing my satellite search and a Wi-Fi search every couple of minutes, and that was using a lot of battery power. So the jury's still out. I'm having fun. Mostly, Gary, what I want to know is, did you get enough snow where you could jump off the roof like you did in 1978? See, I like to listen here, so I know you guys better than you know me. Gary, did you get to jump off the roof? K-A-0-G-Y-F wants to know. Over.
Well, there's a lot of people that like to see me jump off the roof. But the year, you had it right. You had it right, Doug, except for the year. The year was 1966. The year was 1966, and the Cadillac of Central New York Blizzards, which was the Blizzard, of course, of 1966, or Blizzard of 66, as it's known here. And that shut down the city for a week. That shut down Syracuse for a week and shut it down cold, pun intended. So, but we do not have quite that much snow on the ground right now. We do have, and this is, as a matter of fact, I might put the link up in the text box. I have a little webcam that looks out the shack window out into our front yard. And right now there's about 36 inches of snow on the ground, not deep enough really to jump into off the roof. they could, you know, still cause a little bit of injury if you did it. In 66 we had about close to 4 feet come through on top of a couple of feet, you know, on the ground, and plus it was drifting pretty good. So we had some substantial stuff to jump into, but a little too little right now. So let's see what comes down the pike. Back to you, Doug.
Well, I can't comment. Thanks, Gary. 1966. I'll try to remember. You know, I was an amateur radio operator back in Kansas. That's why I have the zero call. But I don't think I had any ice problems. Mostly vertical antennas, you know, my whole life. A few dipoles, but only for 10 and 20 meters. They don't get not long enough to get really iced up. So I can't add to the comment. Hockey stick sounds like a good idea, and Mother Nature sounds like another good idea, and wait till spring. So most of my antennas are down. I have only here a real small little vertical for a 2-meter vertical for this 440 Echolink interface I run here. And for those of you that wonder, and I'll pause. A0GYF Fort Myers. The name here is Doug. I run a 70-centimeter walkie-talkie here, a ham radio Yaesu walkie-talkie with my Echolink and my PC. And it's as simple as a 2N2222 transistor. I haven't mentioned this in over a year. A 2N2222 transistor might be available if you can find a Radio Shack store still open. If you need the schematic to hook this up, and it can be really cheap, I mean like 25 cents, and a couple of old radios from your attic, go online and type in, do a Google search, a Google image search, with the call sign KY6V, and you will get the schematic for the interface for 2-meter 440 VHF UHF interface for as little as 25 cents parts out of your junk box here. And so that's what's going on in Fort Myers. The cats are wanting attention. Kathy, Jake is 22 and a half pounds. His sister's 21 pounds. So his diet hasn't really worked. KA0GYF. Gary?
Hey Doug, I certainly can relate to diets not working for kids. Know all about that one. You know, that's no problem. You know, the KY6V interface is a great gift to the world of amateur radio. I almost built one, but I had a thought. What I was doing was I wanted to build a little simplex interface for I use a VX150 patched out to an external antenna on the truck, and I wanted to have a little simplex link to home here so that I can interface with Echolink. I thought that would be pretty cool. Just drive around the city to get on Echolink, you know, and that would be pretty neat. So I was going to build the KY6V when it occurred to me that I already had a SignalLink interface for my digital stuff. So I said, well, why don't I just patch the old Baofeng into that, you know, because I've got two. I've got two handhelds. I've got the a UV5 and my VX150. So I did that, and it, that works very, very well. So if you have an existing SignalLink USB, you can do that. Or if you want to build the homebrew, the KY6V interface is a classic, and that is for sure. And perhaps we'll have the inventor of that circuit come on later, and we can get some feedback from him on that as well. Let me buy a nickel.
Six, Victor.
As we continue on this cold, dark, and stormy night here in Central New York, and it may not be dark or stormy where you are, we are doing Ask an Elmer on South Cars on the TIN, and quite basically your questions and your comments and, you know, anything that you've got going that you want to talk about in the world of amateur radio, we'd love to hear from you. So before we get on to the next topic, let's see if there's any check-ins out there, see if anybody else wants to come aboard. I'm KC2RMO, this is South Cars, and we're looking for check-ins right now.
Hayaku Menesai Mushy Mushy from 6 Victor.
And Mahatma Gandhi from KC2RMO.
Hi, Gary. Hi, Doug. Hi, everybody. KY6V here. A couple of quick questions. Doug, on this Android situation, is that eating up your time also? For the cell phone, or are you going through your local router, or what, sir? Over.
With the vast Android feature called anti-theft checked off, your Android smartphone reports to the Avast server every 5 minutes, or every 10 minutes, every 15 minutes, however you have it set. And what that was doing, it's going, I have mine set to go out over the internet, but it still turns on everything and searches to connect to Wi-Fi. Anything it can use to search on, like satellites, the GPS satellites, it turns on Wi-Fi, and you can see it searching, trying to connect, and then it uses the cell phone's internet to tell the Avast server where your phone is. And I found that was really consuming battery power. So I'm going to restudy and perhaps only have it do this search every couple hours or so. We'll see if that improves. But it's using the internet data time on the smartphone. That's how it connects to the Avast server. So look for the little green checkbox under anti-theft on the software called Avast antivirus for the Android phone. It's there. And if you have it checked and you haven't tracked your phone, you create an account on Avast on your PC, and it's just a blast looking at those maps and seeing all the places you went, and it's kind of fun, too. It's kind of fun, and it could come in handy if you lose your phone. Okay, is there a GYF, Gordon?
Yeah, okay. Well, I understand all of that, Doug. I guess my question that's not quite understood yet is, if your Android is connecting to the internet through your local router, that's one thing. If your internet is going in through 4G, as an example, directly to the internet, are you not eating up minutes every time this thing tries to generate a search? Over.
I think what you mean is it using up data. And the answer is yes. But, and no, and also no, my smartphone is set to never connect to any Wi-Fi network, not even here at home, because I'm on an unlimited plan. And so, I just leave it set for cell phone internet. I mean, smartphone data internet, and my phone's only a 3G, and it's unlimited. and so I don't worry about the data, but you see it still triggers on the Wi-Fi search, and it starts looking for any way it can to connect, even if you're already connected. It turns on all the receivers in on the smartphone. So that's, I think, is what's been using up my battery. And it's a, you know, probably a 50% higher a battery usage rate, which is, you know, that's a lot. Like, I could go through the whole battery in, like, about 12 to 14 hours. I'd have to charge at lunchtime. So that was significant. Have I helped with the question? All data, not minutes. Over.
Yes, sir. You certainly have. Thanks, Doug. I don't want to tie up Gary's net here. One last quick question. Have you talked with Kevin down in the Keys at all? I've been reading this Pilakea. Now, Pilakea is a Hawaiian term for nonsense going on with Radio Shack. Is he being affected? Over.
Well, I would say, with all the Radio Shack scares of late, none of those scares have ever affected the privately held stores. It's all company-owned stores. Certainly, it's going to affect the stream of products coming out of Texas, you know, where they usually come from. It's going to affect a warehouse, but it won't affect him. And, you know, the changes to the company-owned stores is like a Sprint moves into and calls the store theirs. And I think it's still going to be a Radio Shack store and a Sprint store. So I haven't talked to Kevin since he emailed us at Christmas time. He said he was going to get an antenna and surprise us. And so the answer is no, I haven't talked to him. But in the past, these scares have not affected the privately held stores. Over, KZRGF. Gordon?
Okay, well, that's good news. Thanks, Doug. Give a hug to Marilyn down there. I'm going to turn it back to you, Gary. Talking about cats, are Cuddles? Gary, you have met Cuddles. Is 13.5 pounds. Not as low as we would like to get her. But I'll tell you what, the secret here is don't feed them. Just a little bit for breakfast and a little bit for dinner. And let them whine. Go ahead, Gary, KY6V, over.
Poor Miss Cuddles. I'm surprised she's not carrying a protest sign. I know our guys would, you know, if we did that. They'd throw us out. We'd be outside in that cold. But that's good, though. She's getting down there. She you know, she was fighting that battle. And good for her. Good for Miss Cuddles. You know, she'll thank you for it in the long run, you know. Hey, I wanted to throw a couple things in there. First of all, it's great to hear you again. I haven't heard you for a while. Secondly, on this business of the smartphones, I have a Samsung Galaxy Mega, which is a big old thing. I have that set up. It runs on a T-Mobile network. And I have that thing set up pretty much the opposite of what we were talking about here, where I have that thing set to look for any available Wi-Fi network and latch it. And my battery lasts forever. I mean, like, forever. I mean, I get days and days and days on that thing. Now my plan is such that that I don't worry about a lot of data usage. It's not, you know, it's the quotes unlimited up to 3 gigs or whatever. But I share that with Steph. But the difference being that I go through mostly Wi-Fi networks, and it doesn't read that data that goes across the Wi-Fi network. It just connects to that network and. I do my thing, and everybody's happy. Let me buy a nickel. So my data usage and my battery usage are pretty minimal on that thing. So it's so far working out well for me on that. I guess it's like anything else. You know, your mileage may vary. It depends on your plan. It depends on your phone. It depends on your network. It depends on, you know, the planetary alignment. It could be anything. I mean, so we'll, you know, you do what works, and that's that. But I was thinking about some of the stuff with the droids. And some of the things that I was looking at earlier, you know, it's funny when we were talking about Androids, and I put that link of the different apps that you can put up there in the text box, and some of the stuff that you can do with it. And I wanted to bring this up during the net is using your Android for rig control. I thought that was particularly cool. I really like the idea of that. And one of the things you can do, I've got to tell you about the FTDX. One of the things that you can do with my transceiver, I have an FTDX 1200, and one of the things you can do with that is put it on a network, which is pretty cool. And, you know, if you can do that, you can control it, you know, with a droid device. So I guess the first question I want to throw out to people in the network right now is, have you ever used your droid phone to control your rig? So let's take some check-ins and see if anybody's ever done that. I'm KC2RMO, and this is South Cars.
KC2THO, checking in, short timer. I have another net I have to do. Just popped in to say hello. Try to give you fellows the weather forecast for southern New Jersey. Would you believe that it's up to 64 degrees Fahrenheit? I'm only kidding. Our low tonight is supposed to be 1 with a real field temperature of 2.5. And tomorrow our high is supposed to be in the low teens. That's all I have to say, fellas. I have another net. I'm lucky I stuck in here because you guys were a little windy, but it was interesting. Back to you, Gary. Go ahead.
Tom, you almost gave me a heart attack. I'm like, how are they getting 64? And we're like, where are we down to now? We're down to 3 right now. So, you know, I was saying, how did you do that? And I said, what's he doing, standing in his garage? You know, but great to hear from you. Thank you for checking in. That's super. Apparently, nobody's using their droid for rig control. So I'm gonna give this a whirl, and I'll tell you a little bit about it next time around. See if we can get experiment done. Tell you a little story right now, and this may hit home to you too. So listen up. I was lucky. I was like one of the luckiest people on this planet. For Christmas, Santa Claus, aka my wonderful wife Steph, got me an FTDX 1200. This is a marvelously advanced little radio. It just blew my mind. I am still learning things about this radio. I will still be learning things about this radio next month. Couple of months, you know, and I'd better say that about her as right. But let me tell you what happened to this thing. This thing has been working great. I have been having a ball with it. I'm on it every day. It's just phenomenal. And some of the things I can do with it, I have it set up for ESSB, which is extended or enhanced single sideband, which is almost the quality of AM broadcast. You can do that with just a simple setting on this thing. And as a matter of fact, I'll give you the link if you have an FTDX 1200 or a 3000, it'll work for that the same way. Very simple. It's 2 button presses. But what had happened was I turned the thing on, and it wouldn't tune. It would stay on one frequency. And if you're not familiar with this radio, let me just buy a nickel. If you're not familiar with the radio, it does not have a tuning dial. It has a TFT screen. It has a video screen. It has a display for the frequency on it. It has a video S meter. There's nothing analog on this at all. It's just totally digital. Nothing would tune. I tried resetting the radio. Nothing. I got connected with Yaesu tech support. He suggested a couple of different resets, and nothing worked. So I'm ready to send this thing back into back to California for a warranty repair. And I said, I'm going to give it one more try. Just one more try. And I did the same thing. I did a hard reset on the radio one more time. And son of a gun, if that thing didn't start working again. So the point I'm making is this, is that the radios that we are using nowadays are so much more complex than the radios that that we grew up with. It isn't even funny. The 1200 is a pretty user-friendly high-tech radio. There's other ones out there that you know, would really boggle your mind running them. I mean, you know, but it's just incredible the amount of complexity that is sitting in front of us as we pursue this hobby. It takes a lot of time to get used to them. There's a big learning curve on these, even on the simpler ones, and it takes I think a little more patience than many of us are used to too. That you know, especially with the guy at tech support was not doing anything different than what I was doing. You know, I just was a little more persistent. I did it one more time before I gave up on it, and that solved the problem. So I guess the question is anybody listening, using a radio of that ilk, and have you had that same problem with getting used to it, just getting your feet wet with this thing and feeling comfortable and maybe solving some of the problems that aren't quite so intuitive as the old days? I'm going to throw that out for some check-ins and see if anybody has a comment.
I've 83 MEW.
Okay, we got Bill. Anybody else want to come aboard? No, Bill, go right ahead, please.
Yeah, thanks, Jay. In 2009, I picked up an FT950 by Yaesu. I'd been in love with that rig for some time, and at that particular time, I had a bit of extra cash, and I picked up all the bells and whistles of all of the accessories that went with it, brought it home, and wow, talk about a learning curve. That thing's got more buttons and knobs and dials than I ever seen before, and all run electronically, apparently. Computers, and when they produce an upgrade for it, it's a software upgrade. You got to load it in with a high soft disk or a memory disk, and that updates everything. But what I found out very quickly was that it's a good idea to pay a lot of attention to what buttons you push and in what order you push them, in case you think you know what you're doing and you actually don't. Because all of a sudden, things will start to blink at you. And you turn the knob and it's not tuning. It won't tune squat. It just sits there. And, okay, now what? You key up the mic, no transmit. Oh, boy. Now what do I do? So, I try to avoid, if I can, the factory reset. Because that means I got to go back into menus. And there's a lot of menus in there. And I got to set everything all back up, or try to set everything up the way it was before, so it'll operate halfway reasonably again. Oh, man. It helps to remember what order the buttons you push and which ones it is, so you can reverse it, hopefully. And also, I keep the manual handy. I'm not a very good ham radio operator, I guess, because I read the manuals. I get kidded about that all the time up here. Did you read the manual, Bill? Yes, I read the manual. That's why I know how to do it now. Oh, boy, oh, boy. I remember all the trouble I had a couple of times when I tried to operate split. I got a nickel going here. I couldn't seem to get the radio to operate split. It had its own idea of how that was going to go. And that was only on the first page of the manual that talked about that. I wasn't aware at the time. I didn't notice there was a couple more pages about split. But I couldn't get the right offset, the right frequency. And when I finally did figure that out, I did so out of the... I had this stupid idea that I was going to work K1N, Navista Island. Uh-huh, sure. In your dreams, buddy boy. I got the radio to work okay on the split. It did exactly what the guys wanted me to do. That was okay. But I never did get through a pileup, even though I heard them on three different bands. And I never did make it, so I finally just said, to heck with this, and walked away from it. But that's about normal for me. I've never worked a pileup in my life. So, except when I come on here and I get to work Gord, KY6B, there's always a pileup to work him. So, that's always enjoyable. Anyway, no, the radio is complex. But I'll tell you something else. One more little tip, Gary, that helps. And that's, I belong to the FT950 club on Yahoo, or Yahoo, whichever way you want to call it. And I believe, if I understand it right, there's more than one of those clubs available for different radios and so on. So there very, very well may be one for your radio. And you could, if not for necessarily getting help for yourself, but sometimes somebody asks a question and you know the answer. And you can send in a reply and help somebody else out and so on. So that's something I would recommend for people to do that got these newer modern radios. Oh dear, I think I'm out of stuff to babble about. Back to you, V3MEW.
Thank you so much, Bill. You know, it's true. You need a support group for these things. You really do. This is not an HW101. You know, these are very complex radios, and I'm sure if they've got a group for a 950, they have a group for the X1200. K1N. Don't talk to me about K1N. I tried K1N foolishly, in the afternoon, just figuring, okay, do something, that defies logic, and maybe it'll work. Of course, the results were expected. I tried K1N at 3 in the morning, and I was still trying to bust through a pileup on 100 watts, and it won't work. I tried K1N, I tried going through the DX spots and trying different modes. I'd see somebody worked them RTTY. I'd try, RTTY at 3 in the morning, and nothing. You cannot get through these people. But let me tell you something, and Bill, I'm going to ask you something, too. I'm going to tell you an experience that I had trying to get through that pileup, and I want to see if you had experienced it as well. When I was spending my half an hour's worth of frustration before I, walked away, so this is ridiculous to try and bust through. People were getting harassed by some station, that was just coming back over people that were calling in and saying, KC2, you'd call it KC2RMO. And so you go, KC2RMO, you're an idiot. And you'd get W2XYZ, and it's like, W2XYZ, you're an idiot. And so there'd be some fool doing stuff like that. Had you heard anything like that? Or have you come across anything like that, Bill?
Gary, this is V3MEW. Sadly, I have to say, and a number of my friends agreed with me up here, I've never heard such bad, ignorant, stupid, jerk amateur radio operators in all my life as it did on that particular de-expedition. Right from the days, a couple of days before it actually officially started, the crap was going up and down the radio. And I was actually almost felt embarrassed to tell anybody I was a ham radio operator when you could hear what's going on those stations. It was absolutely horrendous, terrible. And there didn't seem to be much anybody could do about it either. And so now when we talk about running a course to educate some amateurs on there, and we're going to be running a course up here on March the 2nd at the school for some people that want to get their license, one of my concerns now is going to be, how do I try and educate people? How do I try and get to people's emotions to have a little bit of pride as an operator in their skills and their ability, and to try and act like gentlemen and not like complete moronic idiots? I was really disappointed. I never heard such crap in all my life. I do have a question for the group, though, when you're done with that subject, which is slightly related. Just to throw it out to the group to see if anybody would have a response different than mine. KC2RMO, V3MEW.
All right, Bill, I'm going to comment on what you said, and then I'm going to have you throw that question out to the group. I'm glad, number one, that I wasn't the only person that, you know, had that experience. I know the other people that were in that pileup at that time did, but I had a feeling that it was kind of widespread. And I had that same reaction that you did, too. I was kind of embarrassed to be, you know, it's like some old CB junk, you know. I'm like, come on, you know. We studied very hard, and, you know, we put a lot of effort into getting these licenses, and we're supposed to have pride in what we do and hold a higher standard in what we do. And then it occurred to me, too, you know, that we're probably okay. You know, it's these guys that are doing this stuff probably don't have licenses in the first place, you know. And so I guess the rules don't really apply to them. And I don't know, other than, you know, having the FCC guys going out with the triangulation cars and the whole nine yards, what really you can do about it. I think the smart thing to do is just, you know, change frequencies. Go away for a while and, you know, see if they come back. It's a pity, though. It really is, and it just ruins the fun of working a de-expedition like that. Just ruins it for everybody. And I don't know, you know, you got to have less than zero brains to be enjoying that. But I guess there's some people like that out there, and I guess we're always going to have to deal with them. Anyway. Back to you, Bill. You had a question, so VE3MEW, back to you.
I'm not so sure about the brains part, Gary, whether they have a lack of it or they have 2 bucks or whatever they have. But I can tell you one thing that they don't have. I can tell you one thing they don't have for sure. That's self-respect. I'm sorry, I can't conduct myself in that manner. I have too much self-respect for myself as a person, and I know that that's not the right thing to do. So I'm not going to do it, period. And I have nothing to gain by doing it, so forget it. And related to that, here in Peterborough we have a 2-meter repeater, and we have daily nets on it, mostly in the morning between 8:30 and 9 o'clock. We have the professional loafers net, mostly a bunch of retired folks get on there and babble back and forth about one thing and another. Lately, in the last few months, somebody has got one of these DTMF recorders. I don't know whether you guys, anybody knows what they are or not. I've never seen one. I've just heard about it. Apparently it can be used to record the various tones and so on that go into controlling a repeater, and at the push of a button you can play it back. Well, it'll record more than just the tones. So lately this person comes on the radio when you're trying to run a net, and they push the button and they record and they pushes and plays it back, and they just keep doing that over and over again. I guess the only good thing about it is you get to hear what you sound like on the repeater coming out the other end. But it certainly disrupts the net when you're trying to call for check-ins and get people to come on and comment and rag you. I got to buy a nickel here. One person in the group who thinks they know who it might be, but there's no proof. And they even have what they call a motive, what they figure is a motive. But what's interesting is that generally he only picks on one or two people. One of them people is me. So there's been a number of Monday mornings when it's my turn to do the net that I get wiped right out. And then there's my other friend Jim, VA3WIN, who's on Friday. And he usually goes after him too. And there are some people in the group that have hollered back at him and so on, and got a little bit angry and rather emotional. And that's not what, from my standpoint, that's not what you want to do. You're giving the person exactly the reaction that they want. They want you to get mad and get annoyed and so on. And I'm not going to give the person the pleasure of doing that. So normally, for me, personally, when that starts, I just say, okay, good morning, ladies and gentlemen, the net is now canceled. V3MEW clear. And that's the end of it. There's no more. And the guy can keep on pushing the button as long as you want, but there's nothing there to record. Now, other people have said, no, you just up your power. Put your power up to 65, 70 watts and just ride over top of it. Well, I'm just not willing to sit there and listen to it over and over and over and over again. So we're supposed to have a bunch of radio direction finder guys here in the club that love doing that as a hobby. I'm not one of them, but they love doing it. And they're going to try and track this guy down. But some people are pretty sure by the readings they got so far that he's mobile. If he's doing it from a mobile somewhere. So I just wondered if anybody else in the group had similar situations come up in their locality, their city, their town, on their repeater, and how they handled it. V3MEW, back to net.
Hey, thank you, Bill. You know, I got to get a few more watts on 2 meters and maybe a little nice little Yagi, point that baby north, and maybe I can get on that professional lovers net. I like the way that sounds. Let's throw that out to everybody. Have you come across people like this? These people that are creating interference, that are they're giving you a hard time in a network, that are just basically ruining your experience for you. It seems to be that there's more and more of this going on all the time. Let's hear your stories. We'll take check-ins right now on the TIN. I'm KC2RMO, and this is South Cars.
Victor X-Ray Papa.
Rick, hello there, and welcome aboard. Anybody else want to jump in on this one? Nope, nobody else. But Rick, go ahead, sir.
This is N1VXP, Rick in Chillicothe, Ohio. Cold Chillicothe. Current temperature 3. Wind chill of about something like minus 12. We're under a wind chill advisory, and yeah, we're going to get down. Now they're saying minus 10 for a low. They had us at minus 11, but they're still saying it's a record low. And yeah, we're going to have that similar 25 to 30 below wind chill factor by sometime overnight. And we just had, we had 6 inches of snow on one particular bit of the storm. We just had another 3 or 4 inches on the other one. I still haven't cleaned my deck or my steps off from that one because it's been way too cold and too windy out there. And now they're saying, oh, there's a question mark of between 1 to 3 on Friday night and Saturday, another 1 to 3, and also a possible 5 to 8 out of Pandora. That's that storm that the newest one. So we're not sure what we're going to get. We may get more rain out of it than as far as to make up that equivalent of 5 to 8, but at least probably 2 to 6 inches of snow, and we'll get it down here, so Gary, be ready. It might come up your way. Let me drop it for a second. And something else related to weather, I don't know if you've heard it in the latest, was Boston is doing what Buffalo did as far as snow removal. $30 an hour they're paying people to shovel. Of course, they give them a 20-minute on and then 20 minutes off for a break and then 20 minutes back on again. So paying them $30 an hour, and they're saying that they're hoping to get this all done before 30 days. And I look at the calendar, I think, well, 30 days, by 30 days it should be warm. It should be snowing. So, they're saying that's how long they figure they have the train system pretty well cleaned out. Getting over to the interference, you reminded me so much back in my 2 meter days up in Connecticut. We had a particular guy. He was never a ham radio operator. He was a particular guy that was involved in a group that was kind of like a volunteer photography group that went around helping the news media get some media coverage. And somehow one of the guys got a hold of a ham radio, and he started operating the radio. We knew who he was. We ended up advising the FCC at the time, and they said, okay. And then they kind of pushed it back to us. It was our duty to do something. Let me draw for a second. And we kind of narrowed it down. I was out one night, and this guy was driving around in the city, and he was gabbing away. And all of a sudden, I switched my handheld over to the input frequency, and he pegged that meter all the way over. And I saw him drive by, and I said, now I know you by sight. Don't worry, your license plate has now been reported to the police department as a nuisance vehicle on the road. And I just, you know, happened to be right next to a police officer, and he says, what are you telling that guy for? And I said to him, I says, well, I'm just giving him an advice. You know, now he's going to worry about it. All of a sudden, he stopped doing the interference. And it was my way of doing it back to him. Let me drop one more time. And he happened to be over at the local candy store. It was a radio store that was strictly in business. Actually, the owner was a longtime ham, and he started his own business. And this guy that was causing interference happened to walk in, got into a little heated argument with me about what I said over the radio. And the owner of that shop turned around and told the guy, get out of my shop. I don't want to see you ever in this store again. In fact, get out of town. And we all said, okay. I mean, this guy really got at him. And really laid the law on him. That he's not allowed in the store at all. And he personally would do something. And I said, hey, wait a minute, don't do it. But, you know, all of a sudden the guy disappeared. Got off the radio, got off the air. And I have not ever heard him around at all. And I was like, whoa. I guess we really scared that guy bad. But I felt bad in a way. But we didn't do anything illegal. We were all legal about it. I mean, but it was just a scary feeling when you see this guy drive by. And I almost felt like I saw him. I saw his face. I said, I know who you are now. And that shut him up that night real quick. He was on the highway, he was all over the place, interfering with all these different nets that were going on, and said, you can't stop me. I think somebody did, but it was something that had to be done, and, you know, a lot of guys in the area thought, everybody started thanking me for so much, and I said, I was only doing what anybody else would have done, but I was being nice about it. Let me drop one more time. We never yelled at the guy. You know, he was causing interference. We'd say, okay. And we'd carry on our conversation like we don't hear him. And that really got him aggravated even more. And we just totally ignored him. And we found that really got him to the point where he realized, well, he can't interfere it. And anytime that people started yelling, that's exactly like he wanted. So we learned real quick. Ignore him. You know, he'll go away, or he'll stop for a few minutes, find some other frequency to go playing on. But there's always a guy like that in the group, no matter where you're at in the country. And I've learned, just ignore him, and hopefully they go away. N1GXP back to net control.
Well, thanks, Rick. You know, that's the thing. A guy like that, all they want to do is steam your broccoli, you know, and if as long as you're not playing into it, they're going to get frustrated and eventually they're going to stop. They're cowards. That's what it is, you know. They're cowards, and if you call their bluff, that was a great piece of detective work on your part that you figured out, you know, that was. Let's try this. Let's see if this guy, and you check the input, and you know he's off the scale. Very good sleuthing there, sir. But that's basically it, you know. Don't play into this guy's game. Like Bill does, you know, you just shut it down. or if you can't, shut it down. Just walk away from it for a few minutes, and you know, he's gonna get tired of waiting, and you know, and he's gonna get bored with the whole thing. But Steph says she has a solution. What is it? To what? Green beans? What would green beans have to do with? Ah. You can't steam your broccoli if you switch to green beans. Thank you. thanks for the input from the Grange. But seriously, you know, that's the way to do it. Don't play into that stuff. And, but I mean, it's very disappointing. It really is. I seem to be hearing more of it. It was funny. I don't really. I love to work DX. I don't work too many pileups like that. I was surprised to hear that lousy bunch of that poor demeanor. You know, that really, for a lack of a better word, let me buy a nickel. Just really disappointing. Hey, for people who want to take a look at cold and snow, like what Rick was talking about, and like what Bill was talking about, and like what I've been talking about, I put my webcam link in the box. So if you want to take a look at what it looks like to be freezing to death, you can see that in full living color by just going to that address. This is Askin Elmer, and thanks everybody who commented on that. I think that, that it's a big problem, and it's I don't know if it's ever going to go away, but I think that's good advice, basically, just leave it alone, right? What we're doing is we're talking about all things ham radio, technical, or the state of the hobby in general. You know, one of the things... I was talking about the last time that we did this, the last time we got together on this thing, was I had made a discovery about what to do with an old WRT54G. For those who may not know what that is, that's a wireless router, and it's kind of a ubiquitous wireless router. That baby is a workhorse, and there's plenty of them around. What I had found out that you could do with this, and if you do any emergency network stuff, if you're involved in at that level of ham radio, you may already be familiar with this. To me, this was kind of a discovery, a big discovery. And if you are involved in that, this could be something very beneficial to you. It's a thing called broadband hamnet. And what broadband hamnet is a firmware that you load into your into your WRT54G that gives you a self-configuring mesh network. And basically, what a mesh network is a peer-to-peer network of computers. This bit of information kind of blew my mind. I'm looking at this thing, and it says that with the stock antennas and with this firmware update, or with this firmware change on the router, this network will have a range of 10 miles. It operates in amateur frequencies. You have to have an amateur license to use this. But for emergency services, this could really be invaluable stuff. You set up a mesh network with these Linksys routers, these old Linksys routers. They're not that.
KCFCS, check in, Mark in Northeast Ohio. I'll be losing my Wi-Fi connection for a little bit.
All right, thank you, sir. You set up this mesh network. Have the ability at that point with a 10-mile or greater radius on these things to transfer data. You'll have, since you have all the ability to do anything that you would do on a normal network, you have the ability to transmit voice you don't have internet capability unless you have some sort of an interface that'll get you to the internet. But it is a 10-mile LAN works self-discovering, self-configuring, and self-advertising and fault-tolerant is what they say. It's really cool. I have a WRT 54G that's not being used right now. I don't have anybody to play with. Yeah, nobody around here does this stuff. So I don't know. I'm going to throw it out to you. If you're involved in emergency services, are you aware of this? Have you ever set up anything like this? If you're not involved in emergency services, have you played around with anything like that, or is this the first time you've ever heard of it? It was news to me. I thought it was really, really cool, and I was amazed at the capabilities of it. So we'll throw that out for check-ins right now. This is the TIN. I'm KC2RMO. This is South Cars, and we're looking for check-ins.
P3MEW.
Hey, Bill, thanks for coming back. Anybody else? Nope, but Bill, go right ahead.
Yeah, just a couple points to make here. In reference to the chap that may or may not be responsible, it's been suggested, and I don't know the facts, it's just been suggested the individual may have some medical issues as well. Apparently, if he's on his meds, so there you go. The other thing I wanted to mention to him of some kind, and see if you can get through to Peterborough, I think I can make it a little easier for that, Gary. I don't know whether you're registered as an all-star user or not. And this, of course, goes for anybody else on the on this whole group here. We have All-Star Link on our Peterborough repeater now, V3PBO. And some of the local guys are using it for communicating with friends and family at distances, going through other repeaters that they know have All-Star. So if you're registered as being registered on All-Star, it's like Echolink almost. You have to sort of register. There is a routine you can download into your computer, and you can run it from your computer like a transceiver, just like you do Echolink. That might be a quick, easy way for you to get up into our net in the morning there, Gary. The last thing I would mention would be I'm extremely interested in that wireless router mesh network you talked about. I really would appreciate, sir, if you could take a few minutes to put some of the thoughts and ideas and stuff you know about it on into an email and pop it off to me. It might be just a ticket for some of the communication exercises we do up here. It might help us tremendously. So I know that sometimes that kind of equipment is available pretty reasonable sometimes at ham radio flea markets. And what have we got here? WW Broadband Ham. Okay. I'm going to put my cursor over that and go Control C and copy and paste that into my little notepad thing here. So, okay. Very good, Gary. Thank you very much, sir. That's now being pasted into my little notepad here, and I'll be checking that out before the night is out, sir. Thanks very much for your time. I'm going to say cheers, one and all. Time for me to go see about feeding my dog. Oh, V3MEW up in Peterborough, where it's going to be minus 38 tomorrow morning. I'm clear.
And cheers to you, sir. Hey, a couple of things. I didn't know about the All-Star. We don't have any All-Star repeaters here. I'm still trying to find an Echolink repeater. That's why I came up with the idea of my Simplex interface. But it is if it works the same way as Echolink does, I'm going to be checking that out. So you might just be hearing me some morning on that net. Yeah, definitely go to that link, Bill, because that is the kind of the definitive link for broadband hamnet. And apparently, broadband hamnet is the gold standard firmware for this sort of thing. I think there's a couple of other ones out there, but this seems to be the one that people prefer, it's kind of the one that everybody uses. It is a fast network. Those 54Gs are everywhere. I mean, you ought to be able to pick them up for $20-25 a piece if somebody's selling. I'm sure you're going to find them at a ham fest. You could probably find them on Craigslist. You can probably find, you know, they're all over the place. And it just seems to have great potential, especially for emergency services. I was thinking about that. I said, you know, that's a real godsend. You know, you get some laptops and you connect to this thing, and it just has endless uses. So, yeah, definitely check that out, that link, and if there's anything I can do to help, let me know. And I'll send you whatever information I can find. But that's pretty much the definitive source right there. Broadband hamnet is the way is what this thing is called, and it looks pretty darn good. So something to check out. This is an Ask an Elmer, and oh, by the way, Bill, stay warm. Stay warm, definitely. We're all going to have to be bundling up. If you're north of the Mason-Dixon line, you're going to be cold tonight. This is Ask an Elmer. We're talking about all things ham radio related, technical stuff, and just the nature of the hobby, and yeah, just anything that you've got on your mind that's ham radio related. Let me buy a nickel. We were, you know, talking a little earlier about new hams, and I don't know who out there is a new ham or not. One question I ask of new hams is where do you want to go with the hobby? A lot of folks go in as technicians, and they're happy with that, and there's nothing wrong with that at all. Some people, you know, they get that first ticket as a technician, and they get that bug. You know, they wanna move on to HF, and you know, you want to go worldwide, and you want to do some of the crazy things that people do on HF. And my wife will never understand the things that I do. I just got to, which is pretty good, I got to say. The farthest I've ever gotten on 100 watts in a loop antenna, I did get to Japan, and that's my trophy, you know, was Japan. But we've gotten, we're doing pretty good getting into Europe a lot. We've gotten some Madeira Island. You know, we've gotten almost into Africa, you know, a couple times. I have gotten to Antarctica, but never made a complete QSO there. It faded too quick. But it's those things. It's that adventure. You know, it's that adventure. It's a lot of fun. It's something that you can't get working the 2 and 6 meter repeaters in your locality. Nothing wrong with that, but it's like some people have that itch to go a little further. Let me buy a nickel. Rick is telling us that. By the way, thank you, Bill, for the all-star link. Rick is telling us now they have dropped to zero with a wind chill of minus 10. I am looking in my at my weather station here with a in the backyard. I have two above. I have a wind of 13 miles an hour, so that's knocking it that wind chill down probably in that minus 10 to 15 degree range. So we're cold. We are cold up here. You know, everybody north is cold. But so just to get back to that question, if you're a newer ham, if you're holding a technician ticket, I'm going to ask the question right now. Do you intend to stay as a technician? Do you intend to move on? Would just like to hear where people are at. So I'll ask that question now. Let's take some check-ins. I'm KC2RMO, and this is South Cars.
Well, speaking of Japan, Hayaku Menesai Mushi Mushi from Six Victor.
And Mahatma Gandhi to you, sir.
Thanks, Gary. Great question. I don't know how to answer that, you know, being around the barn here for a long, long time. So I'm not even going to attempt it. The 54G, you've got me excited about this. Is there a way to take the communications that you can establish on 54G within this 10-mile range and play it back through the internet? Over.
I suspect there is. And again, you know, that's the problem without having anybody to play with. It's like I can read this stuff and I can say, okay, well, but it would make sense. Think about it this way. If you have a mesh network set up with a group of computers, and they're all talking to it. This thing is amazing, too. And if you look, Gordon, in the text box, I put the link to this organization there. But you've got a self-configuring network that's operating at ham radio frequencies. If these computers are all talking to each other, then they should have the ability, one of them should be linked to a server that can get you on the web. If that's the case, then, you know, you can go all the way. You have a LAN, an interconnected mesh LAN, that will ultimately connect in one form or another to a LAN, to a WAN, rather, in getting outside of that. And think about it. You know, you could have an emergency services application. You could have an emergency services intranet, okay, that with proper permissions you could go through a server and connect outside, you know, so you could have that interface with the internet and do all the things that you do on the internet with that. And this is all with these WRT 54Gs linked together. It's pretty exciting stuff. Back to you, sir.
Thank you. All right. Well, this is all new to me, Gary, so I'm trying to wrap my arms around it. How does the 54G network connect to amateur frequencies to start with? Over.
Okay. It's up in the, I forget what the frequency was. It's capable of doing it, and I want to say it's in the 70 centimeter band. That's number one. And the way to do it, the way that you get this thing to operate, because it's capable of doing that, but you have to tell it that it's capable of doing that. And the way you do that is by changing that firmware. So if you go to this broadband hamnet download the firmware and flash the firmware on this thing, on the 54G, it changes it around and it says, okay, I'm now operating up on the 70 centimeter band, and I'm operating at a higher power than I would in your home and the whole nine yards. I don't know what the wattage figure is that that thing can put out, but it does put out more than it does at home, and you don't have to use apparently anything more than the antennas that you're using now, and this baby will work in a radius of 10 miles, which it just totally blew my mind. I'm like, really? So I'd like to set one up. I just don't have, the ability to test it. The idea being though that if you can, and this thing's self-configuring too. So, in other words, if I'm sitting a couple of miles away from you, and I've made the same modification to my router, let me just buy a nickel, and it broadcasts an SSID, a broadband hamnet, I guess that's what the SSID is, as long as it sees that as a broadcast ID, It's gonna link to that. And it does this all by itself. It's self-configuring. It's self-advertising and self-configuring. So you just as long as you make this modification, the members are gonna find themselves. They are going to configure themselves, and you're gonna be talking to somebody else that's doing the same thing. So it's kind of It's pretty cool stuff. So again, it's something to play with. It does help, I think, to have another person involved. Ultimately, if you have a server that will take you out to the internet, and you have that interfaced with the mesh network, you can get outside with that too. So I don't see that as being impossible to do at all. Back to you, KC2RMO.
Well, I find this fascinating. Thank you, Gary. KY6V here. So I'm assuming that once you go through this configuration, that you're going into a network node, possibly, or whoever you're connected to. And if that station is connected, let's say, to Echolink, and can transfer that service from one to another, then we could be worldwide. Am I reading this correctly? And let me ask you the $64 question. How do you limit this to hams only? Over.
Well, there's a very good question. I have not tried to download the firmware. It may be a situation where you can only download the firmware if you can prove your license, just like when you sign up for Echolink, you have to have yourself validated and the whole thing. It may be a deal like that. I don't know, because I haven't tried to do that. But let me read to you some of the talking points that they have on the information page here at Broadband Hamnet. This is written by Rick Kirchhoff, who didn't write the law, but his call NG5V is in Victor. Broadband Hamnet is a network, not an application software. It's a special firmware that transforms consumer wireless gear to a specialized ham radio function. It can use application software to transport your data from place to place, but you must provide the application software just like you do at the home or office. In other words, it's you have to have your own computer running there, and you have to have your own stuff running too, but it's a networking software. A mesh network is a highway over which data travels. Turning on two mesh nodes loaded with our firmware creates a data network. This highway carries your cargo, data, and allows your local computer to use information or applications stored in other locations. Mesh nodes were originally consumer wireless routers, but changed function when the firmware was changed. After conversion, the WAN, LAN, and Wi-Fi ports are linked using special rules and no longer operate like a normal wireless router. Some devices have only a single network connection. Others, like the WRT54 series, have multiple LAN jacks, and the internet jack all have the Wi-Fi antenna and signal. By a nickel. Mesh nodes are self-discovering, self-configuring, self-advertising, and fault-tolerant. Mesh nodes are a data network without the wires. Mesh nodes are small, portable, low-power, and inexpensive. They have a range of 10 miles or more using stock power and gain antennas if you have a true line of sight. Mesh nodes communicate with other nodes over Wi-Fi frequencies and only talk to other mesh nodes on the wireless port. So I think there's probably some more to be discovered, if you go to the site and you actually try to download this firmware. And I think there's a bunch of experimenting to be done. But huge potential there. I mean, I think there's huge potential there that I could see that, in an emergency services situation as really being a godsend. What do you think? KC2RMO to KY6V.
Yeah, I'm following your thoughts completely. Well, thanks for that, Gary. I'll look into that site. This could be another avenue If it's controlled properly, you have to be a licensed ham. You've already covered that. And can come into this network, assuming that it's available to the person that's using it, get into a node that can transfer it to Southcars, we could have a real boomer going over.
Yeah, I don't see any reason why not. You know, I think the specifics are such that it's, you know, it's going to take some R&D, but I do see what you're talking about, and it could be pretty amazing. I think it opens a lot of doors, so definitely worth doing a download. Definitely worth playing around with. I like it. I really do. I want to mess with it a little more. I really think it's great. Like I say, I've got a router. I have no facility. I have nobody to work with it on the other end. You know, so I'm sitting up here like Doc Brown. 1.21 gigawatts. Back to you, sir.
You know, I was sitting back chuckling here, Gary. I've got some neighbors around here that I don't think I want to have on Southcars. Over.
You know, you may have hit the nail on the head there too. I think I'd join you in that opinion. But yeah, it's really, you know, it's really worth playing with though. I think this is some great stuff. And like I say, I learned about mesh networks of a different kind. This was years ago. This was like maybe, oh gosh, this was a long time ago. I'm going to say 2004, somewhere around there. I was back in school after my job was graciously exported to China, and I was taking information systems. And I took Cisco networking, and you know they covered mesh networks then. It was just something that they put up as a you know, as an example. It's just you know, there were all these different types of networks, and they gave you the basics of mesh networking, but you never really got into it that deeply, you know. But here it is in a practical sense, and kind of with the ability to make a, you know, some lemonade out of a lemon. Not that a WRT-54G was a lemon. It was a great router. It still is a great router. You know, it's just by today's standards a little slow, being a G, but it still has plenty of serviceability in a situation like this. So I'd like to play with it. I'd like to encourage other people to get their hands on it and play with it and report back to us and let us know what's going on with it, because I think it has great potential. Back to you.
Yeah, it sounds like it to me. Well, you know, the mesh network is not a common name for me. So my ears really perked up here tonight, Gary. But you being a musician also, I will bring your attention to the song that started with Mishmash and leave it at that. KY6V, over.
Or was that Splish Splash? I was taking a bath. You know, but we'll cover Bobby Darin's greatest hits too. You know, it's a type of a configuration, and again, you don't see it too often. It's not that there was anything that there's any deficiency in it. It's just that it's not a common type of a configuration. It doesn't in an office situation. It doesn't lend itself well to that architecture, or there are other types of networks that suit that architecture maybe a little a little better, are easier to administer. In a situation in an ad hoc situation like, you know, let's say you're out in an emergency situation, you know, where you have to throw together a group of computers and get them talking to each other and maybe interface with the outside world, and you have to do that quickly and easily. This seems to be like an insanely good type of a configuration. I think this has got some huge potential.
Yeah, well, I agree. Okay, Tiger. I hope that you and your bride are doing well. And we are so tired. We have been obliviated by the cold weather that you two have been sending down to us. Over.
Hey, it hasn't been easy to get all this cold that far down. This has been a real effort. But I don't know if you heard at the beginning of the network. We have had this cold now it's been about the past 12 or 15 days. It has been in one form or another, whether it has been actual temperature on the thermometer or, you know, wind chill, has been below zero. In the past 15 days, we've maybe had 2 days that were actually double digits. The forecast just came out today. We are not going to see anything that approaches normal temperatures. We are going to be in single digits and below zero from now right through the rest of the month. So we are locked into this. This is like I'm building an igloo. I'm putting the I'm going to open up a ham shack and an igloo, I'm going to call it my own de-expedition. Back to you.
How do you heat an igloo and keep it intact? Over.
Ah, that is the challenge. I will have to consult my. My consultant, Nanook of the North, he knows all those tricks. So hopefully we'll stay warm there. You know, we'll just, I think you have to buckle up your mucklucks and hope for the best.
Mucklucks. Okay, Tiger. Well, look, give a hug to Stephanie, and we'll see you later. Thanks for running a great show tonight, sir. KY6V.
I will do that, and I thank you, sir. This is South Cars. This is Ask an Elmer, where we're talking about all things amateur radio related. One thing talk about jumping around, right? we've gone from Androids to broadband hamnet mesh networks with old routers. I just want to throw this one in before we wrap it up for the night, because this is something. That I have kind of been involved with let me tell you the story. I'll tell you the story, and I've told this story before, but you may not have heard it. So we'll repeat it briefly. I have always wanted to talk to the International Space Station. I just thought that would be like, you know, one of the cooler things that you could do with amateur radio. I was horribly ignorant on how to do it. So a couple of years ago, I said, you know what, I'm going to do it. So I got the basic information. I had the info on when the space station was going to be flying overhead, and I got the frequencies, and I'm out there. I hooked up this. I put a grip on the end of a J pole antenna, copper pipe J pole. I had that hooked up to my VX150, and I'm standing out there in the yard at 9:30 at night, calling CQISS. And of course, the neighbors are, you know, they had an idea that I was weird. before then, and it was confirmed that I was weird after that episode. And I would do that for every night for, you know, 4 or 5 days during that that little stint, and you know, it was obviously totally unsuccessful. I later learned that you're never going to get this thing with a J-pole that you're holding in your hand. Or certainly you can get it with a handheld, but not with that antenna. So what I did was I got a hold of an Aero, actually got it for Christmas 1 year, an Aero antenna, which is a great little handheld directional gain antenna that you can... you know, zero in on that space station, and you know, you follow it along with your hand, or you can put it on a tripod. Want to actually see this being used, go on YouTube. A fellow by the name of Randy K7AGE has some great videos on many aspects of ham radio. Does a lot of instructionals on that's easy for me to say, instructionals on digital modes. He has a great instructional on how to talk to the ISS. Let me buy a nickel. So Randy, you know, he's using this antenna, this Aero antenna. He has it. He made a rig out of aluminum channel and hooks it up on this tripod, and he's got the whole thing. And long story short, he gets the overflight times wrong, and misses it. But it was a great set of instructions. So, but the antenna he used was this Aero antenna. It costs if you get it with a duplexer, which allows you to transmit and receive on it at different frequencies. You can have actually two different frequencies. If you have the duplexer, I think the thing is like $120. If you buy it without the duplexer, it's like $89. I bought the cheapo version of it. I had that. So $89 in that text box right now is a link that will show you how to build the same thing functionally. With some, assuming you've got a few parts in your junk box for $4. So if you ever thought about contacting the ISS and you want to do it on the cheap, go to that link. It will make you happy. Although the Aero antenna is very nice, I like it. It's got some very useful things, and maybe if I don't connect the bill via All-Star, I can point that thing to Peterborough, and maybe we'll get across the lake with that thing anyway. Okay, getting late, and we're kind of winding things down. I think what we'll do is we're going to make it last call here. We're going to say that's it. Speak now or forever hold your peace. So last time around for check-ins, this is KC2RMO on the TIN. And we're looking for the final set of check-ins right now. Okay, this was the sound of silence. So we will call it quits. I want to thank you all for joining in tonight. This was a fun net. I always love doing Asking Elmer. This is great stuff. And we will talk to you again the next time around. Thanks for being there. This has been SouthCars, the South Coast Amateur Radio Service. VoIP net schedules and general information may be found on the voip.southcars.com website. Your net control for this session has been Gary, KC2RMO, saying 73 and closing this VoIP session. Thanks for your participation. This net is closed.
A great net, Gary. Always enjoyed it. And keep in mind one thing. I got a cousin of mine up in Maine, and their low temperature is only going to be -2 with a wind chill of something in the -18 to -24. So we're getting it colder down here than Maine, which kind of surprised me. I thought Maine would be colder, but not tonight. Have a good one, and talk to you later. KC2RMO, N1DXT.